Hello, Cinnabar Moss, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to the Writer's Triangle, Cinnabar Moss podcast about all things publishing and books. Today we're here at Leah Dawn, our writer in residence for Cinnabar Moth Collections. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Thank you for being on.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about diversity in writing. And I was wondering, when did you first learn about the concept of diversity, and what does diversity in writing mean to you?
I mean, I think this is such an odd topic. I mean, I think like the idea of diversity probably popped up, you know, 2012 or somewhere around there when I first started, you know, going back to college. Yeah, I think maybe that's, I mean, this is stretching back, so that's probably the first time I ever recall, you know, really hearing it used anyway. As far as, like, it's such a, I, you know, I have mixed feelings about this topic. I'm sure we'll get to that. I think, like, in theory, diversity in writing is trying to capture, you know, I think it's, I can't remember if it's Emily Towns or Tracy West, these two really great womanist ethicists that talk about, you know, truth coming from a multiplicity of voices. So when I think about like diversity, I think about that, about truth coming from a multiplicity of voices, from different social positions, from different genders, from different, you know, ethnicities. I don't like saying race or, you know, whatever. I think that's constructed, but yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, I think if we're talking about diversity in writing, then I would think about that, about trying to find the truth in a multiplicity of voices.
Okay, so for you, it's a matter of having as many voices from as many different backgrounds express themselves openly.
For sure. And I do think, like, I think, like, we need to, in this instance, I think in a lot of instances, socially speaking, that we can no longer really be talking about equality. We need to talk about equanimity. Or if we want to say it in, like, layman's terms, rebalancing the fulcrum. So there's just, in writing, in music, in entertainment as a whole, in politics, in every facet of life, you know, the voice that has held space for the longest has been a white, straight, cis, hetero, you know, male, often in an upper class. So if we're talking about diversity and truly being diverse and truly being equanimous in that, then it's about uplifting voices that are traditionally marginalized.
Okay. That makes sense to me. The concept of, well, you can't just treat people, just treating people equally is great, but we also need to spend time supporting the voices that haven't gotten support before, and supporting the people that haven't gotten support before.
For sure, and telling the stories that have historically not been given the space to be told. And I think it's really important. I've noticed this, what's happening in some of the big five publishing is that they're saying, oh, well, we're talking about, we want more diversity in voices, but it's still the same, like, form story or form letter that we're getting. It just happens to be coming from a Black voice or an Asian voice or, you know, but it's still the same story. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
They follow a very certain formula with the writing that ends up being, it's so templated, I guess would be the way I would say it is.
For sure.
And
for
ends
sure.
up feeling like it's the same type of thing and doesn't really feel as diverse as it could be because it's still the same general format for the story.
Well, yeah, and I think there's a reason for that. I think the reason for that lies behind the fact that the target audience is going to be, you know, white middle class women that want to reread the same eat, pray, love story over and over and over again, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to scale this back a little bit to talk about use a bit more specifically with writing and diversity. And do you consider yourself You talked about hearing voices from multiple different backgrounds. Do you consider yourself to be a part of that diversity in writing and that growth in diversity in writing? All right, and how do you see yourself contributing to diversity in writing?
I mean, I probably don't see myself as being part of that kind of diversity in writing, mainly because I'm not talking about, you know, my own Arab ethnicity. I'm not talking about, well, excuse me, a mixed European Arab ethnicity. I'm not talking about stories from that very particular social location. So you're not really getting any diversity in that part. I think at least in my genre, which is, you know, dirty realism or transgressive fiction, and I'm really putting fiction in quotations, and we said this last interview, fiction, that there's just not a lot of women writing in that genre. And I don't know if that's maybe because most women have more class and tact than I do, or whatever, or I don't know, or maybe they there's more of, you know, a gripper, the need to feel more feminine. I don't know. I'm so happy to see more female writers in this genre, but I think the downfall for us is that it's always the same kind of evaluation. And we're trying to be like Ginsberg, or, you know, in my case, so you're just trying to be like Bukowski, and it's like, this is just how I write. But no, I wouldn't say that I'm maybe in that sense, you know, as a woman coming into dirty realism or being a part of that genre, maybe that's adding to diversity, but I don't know if that's supposed to be like a, it could be tokenized. I don't know, but.
Okay, so you kind of have mixed feelings about whether or not you're part of diversity in writing.
For sure. Like, I don't think that I came into publishing. I really want to be very specific with that, you know, because I've always written the way that I write, and I have different styles of writing. I have academic writing, I have editorial writing, I have my own poetry, my journaling styles, whatever, but I've always written the way that I write. And like, shocker of shockers, I only came across Bukowski about 3 years ago, and I was like, oh cool, somebody else that's a scummy fuck like me. but it's not something that I looked at, you know. I guess I had been looking for that type of grit, you know. I was looking for, God, what's his name? Jim Carroll from the Basketball Diaries. And I'm like, this is still not enough for me. So when I finally did kind of go down the rabbit hole and find Bukowski, I was like, oh, great. But it's still, you know, like, I grew up with Angelou. So if anybody had been an influence on me, it would have been her. But I don't know. I totally got off track chasing rabbits there. I'm so sorry. But yeah, I feel really, I don't know, maybe ambivalent. The knee-jerk reaction for me is to say, no, I don't think that I'm contributing any diversity in part, you know, in the writing community. Like, if I think about it, then sure, maybe just inherently by being a woman in this genre, it's diverse. I don't know.
I think with that, you mentioned that it's coming from different backgrounds, right? And so yeah. Just from that definition of expanding the types of voices and the backgrounds of the voices that we're hearing in writing in different genres, if you are from a group with a background that's not common in the writing, in the genre, then wouldn't that be contribution to diversity by virtue of the fact that you're expanding the types of voices that are being spoken about and that are being read?
Yeah, but I mean, it could just be... I mean, I don't think that I've entered publishing with the intent to diversify it by any means. And also, like, I think this word is definitely a buzzword, especially in academia, you know, and we're seeing that more in like the corporate environment. Oh, you know, we're committed to diversity. Okay, well, what do you mean by that? You know what I mean? Because you still have a corporate dress code in effect that is very classist and racist, you know, right. And anti woman. And I think that kind of pops off mine because I just had to deal with that myself. Like, I think it's a good aesthetic that a lot of people are trying to employ, this idea of diversity, but I don't think that, I think when pushed to really work on diversity, they have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Hmm. And there's a lot of cases of companies or groups of people who will be like, yeah, diversity is great, and give the thumbs up in their public face. But then if you were to ask them, okay, what does that actually mean, though? That they wouldn't be able to give a satisfying answer.
For sure. I remember a moment during my undergraduate degree. I was at a private, I was a little white trash person, you know, a little gutter snipe, going to this very rich kid private undergrad on scholarship. And one of my professors was like, our campus has reached 15% diversity. And before I could stop myself, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Is that because you're counting all the janitors and cooks and cleaners that are all Black, or are we just talking about the student body? And the whole room went quiet. I'm like, did I say something wrong? Okay, just me. Never mind. You know. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a really hot buzzword. I think you know, being woke and being into social justice and or peace and justice or whatever you want to call it these days is a good aesthetic. But when push comes to shove, it's really a lot of verbiage containing the same old bullshit. But trying to look progressive.
And so following up on that with but moving a little bit more towards publishing, what do you think publishers and editors of literary magazines and people in that field, in that area, can do to increase diversity in publishing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that the only, and please forgive me, I'm coming off of a heavy social ethics womanist semester. So my brain is right there. I'm like, if you really want to talk about diversity, real diversity in publishing, then I think the priority needs to be given to historically marginalized voices. And we're not just talking about historically marginalized. Let's talk about the marginalized of the marginalized. I think that Black women need to be held up and their voices prioritized far more than most people that are getting into publishing right now. If we really want to talk about diversity and we really want to talk about balancing the fulcrum, at least in the United States, that's my frame of reference. My next critique, I guess, would be like, we really need to start prioritizing Palestinian voices, because if you want to talk about the marginalized of the marginalized, there we go. That is one way to drive diversity, especially in a super hyper-Christian, hyper-Zionist American culture. But I think that will, I mean, if you want to go that far, I think that's going to raise some eyebrows for sure. But if you want to stay quote-unquote safe, then let's start prioritizing the voices of Black and brown women and telling their stories, their specific stories from their specific context, not simply trying to put blackface on a white woman's story and calling it diverse, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense to me. It's a matter of letting them actually write their stories rather than expecting them to fulfill the like standard format for what a story is quote unquote supposed to be to appeal to their usual audience. It's a matter of being willing to break away from that standard form and accept something that's well written but different from what they would normally do.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that takes a really concerted effort, and I think it takes a lot of spine, because people are going to get offended, you know. And I feel like it's those voices that are like, oh, you know, I don't understand why we need to be diverse. You know, it's the same type of people who are like, oh, affirmative action is a bad idea. And I'm like, you're kind of racist.
This might be a low key thing or high key thing for you, but either way.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like, okay.
And so touching on that point that you just brought up about people talking about diversity and feeling like it's somehow negative. At Center Bar Moth, we like to focus on diversity and talk about it and feel that it's about raising, like you mentioned, all voices aside from the mainstream point of view to really have this expansion of experience and being able to enjoy and experience the points of views and the backgrounds a bunch of different people, right? And so what would you say to those who are arguing against diversity by claiming that somehow focusing on it is silencing the mainstream voices or point of view?
I like my knee-jerk reaction is to call them, you know, a piece of shit racist. that's my knee-jerk reaction, and maybe I should filter myself before. But like, when you find look, 99.9% of the time, the people that are arguing against quote unquote diversity, or at least what they think is diversity, are white people, right? And I think, look, I'll try and be empathetic here. Change is difficult, right? Especially if it's happening all at once. But like, white folks need to learn how to let go of this kind of it's the, you know, the hegemonic power of whiteness. Like white needs to maintain the majority in everything. And it's just like, okay, well, we've heard this story before. So if you're arguing against diversity and allowing space and time and like creativity to hear other stories besides the same old white thing over and over and over again, like, you might have a problem with some racism that you need to address. And can I recommend a couple books for you? You know what I mean? You know, and what does it mean by like silencing mainstream voices? Like, these white, you know, and I'm being very specific here, white cis hetero male voices are probably always going to be what is normative and what is like held up more, you know, and what is put out there more. Like, it's like mainstream media, right? There's a reason why subcultures and indie presses and non-mainstream media exist, because A, people are tired of hearing only this kind of mainstream narrative, and they deem it important that there's something else being said. I don't think like I don't think that white voices will ever be, boy, I'm gonna get myself in the shit here, I know it, but fuck it. You know, I don't think white voices will ever be silenced, and this idea that it will be is kind of like a little ethno-nationalist to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, next we're gonna be talking about how white women need to have more kids. Oh, wait a minute. Like, I don't know if you've been watching the stuff happening in the U.S., but I guess, you know, we're heading right down that white ethno-nationalist line, which freaks me out. But right. Yeah.
So I think that it is very important to understand that there's a difference between, well, for one thing, they've already had a lot of publicity. They're part of the mainstream, so the mainstream's always mm-hmm. going to have some force behind it. But also, just because other people are being lifted up doesn't mean you're being pulled down.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Because I do think that there is this problem of kind of like crabs in a barrel mentality. Everybody mm-hmm. thinks that everybody else is a crab. This is particularly like you mentioned with the white cishet male voices in particular. Some of the people I've talked to in the past have been, or at least the mainstream have been, like, but what does that do against me? How does that will pull my options down? It's like, you have so many options already. It's really not right. This is giving other people a way in to what you already have,
right? And you know what's particularly interesting, like that idea of like allowing other the response to allowing other people the same amount of time and space to do and have what white people have already, and white people's reaction to that is, well, what about me, is so intensely narcissistic, like I can't handle it. It's crazy.
And so I want to change topics a little bit here away from that, because I think we've gotten some good talks, but if we continue this, we're going to be agreeing with each other and be like, you're so right, you're amazing.
And then it's going to turn into a downward spiral of like, those fucking white people, man, you know, like it always does.
And so I want to pull it back a little bit and talk about your writing in particular. With your writing, you touch on pain and loss quite a bit. And what drives that focus for you?
I feel like, you know, whatever is coming out of my brain, it comes out on the paper. I don't intentionally write very often. I think like my upcoming book is the one piece of like intentional writing that I did. And maybe that's why I think it's actually good, because like I didn't just let chaos come out of my brain. But if I had to think about it, like what is compelling about the human condition are those moments of pain and loss and love and empathy and like these very vulnerable bits of ourselves that we try and hide from one another. I think maybe that drives that focus, or at least unintentionally does so, or unconsciously does so. Like I feel closer to people, and maybe this is coming from my own damaged space, but like I feel so much more part of like the human species when I find somebody or some piece of writing or music or whatever that is able to speak to the kind of negative shit that I've felt, because so much of like American culture right now, excuse me, like U.S. American culture, we're a huge continent. So much of like U.S. American culture is predicated upon this kind of toxic positivity and look how great everything is in my life. And I think that makes a lot of us feel super alienated. And then when we come across something or somebody that's like, yeah, things are kind of shitty and this is why, and they're being honest about it, I think that's compelling. And I think that we connect with that on some level. And I think it reminds us like, hey, I'm human and other people are human too. And maybe we can be human together, you know? Mm.
And so it's not an active thing for you, but it's sort of just, it's what you respond to well. And so that ends up being how you also express yourself.
For sure. And I definitely wonder at times if like what comes out on a piece of paper for me, because I'm a savage and I'm still writing with paper and pen. I wonder if that really, I mean, it probably is a product of the way that my brain has been wired over the years due to like trauma or whatever, you know, that tends to be the focus, maybe, I don't know. But I do write a lot about love too. Like I have been on like a rash of love poems lately, which is really disgusting. I need to get back to my harder hitting pieces. People are going to start thinking I'm a one trick pony, and I don't like that, but yeah.
Okay, so you're writing, while it's not always on this, you kind of just I think we've talked about this before, where you sort of just kind of go with the flow of how you're feeling and put that out there.
And for sure.
And with that, with your journey and your process with going into poetry and fiction writing and such, what would be something that you think would surprise people if you were to tell them about your journey?
Let's see. My fiction is not fiction. I think everybody knows that by now, though. Like my fiction, my pieces of flash fiction are things that actually happened to me. So like if you've read Newports or like Child Locks or whatever, those are things that actually happened to me. I am not. I mean, I think that I have a propensity to fantasize about things that happen in my life. Like, I'm going to get this job, and then when I have that money, I'm going to go buy some cute leather chaps or something. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely have that kind of wishful thinking of like future planning or whatever, but I don't have the type of imaginative mind to be able to create worlds and people and dialogue out of thin air. It's just not. And I think that's maybe why I'm a really shitty liar. I just don't have that kind of creative spark. So all of my quote fiction is just not, it's not fiction. It's things that happen. And that's maybe that would be surprising. I think the other thing is that like, I don't sit down and intentional, I'm like writing is a compulsion. I'm always writing something. But like, I don't sit down at 5 PM and crack a beer or some coffee or get my desk set up and go on, okay, I'm going to intentionally write this poetry now. It comes when it comes, and like when blocks happen, they happen. And it's either because I'm trying to write something and can't get it out. I've had that happen before where like, I need to tell this one story and like I can't bear to write it just yet. But I just, it's kind of like a depressive episode, right? You just kind of have to wait it out. But I don't force myself to write. I think when you do that, like, bad things come out, like crappy quality, and it doesn't come off as authentic anymore. So, like, I'm not going to, like, if I'm feeling a love poem, for example, like, I'm going to write the love poem. If I'm feeling like, hey, I need to write something about hot dogs today, that's where it's going. You know, unfortunately, that's getting posted to the blog, but, you know, whatever.
And so for you, with your writing, there's kind of always that in parentheses, based on real events tag.
For sure. Like, the it is a veneer of fiction, if we can call it that. The thinnest of, it's like a top coat, you know, for your nail polish, just like your top coat. And like, I very intentionally don't use people's names or like identifying things. It's, you know, so it, like, there's, what do they call that? Plausible deniability, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, no, it never happened, but it did. Like, I wrote a story about a woman peeing on the subway when I was in New York City last semester, and that is absolutely true. It absolutely happened. You know, I just don't know how to world build, you know. And what's the old saying? You know, you write what you know.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I definitely understand that, because I've, when I wrote my book, I was there. Obviously, it's a fantasy world with like pixies and such. So, it delves into things that are outside reality. But a lot of the references that I make are, or at least like the personalities of people and such, or even the characters, I do take bits and pieces from people that I've met over the years. Mm-hmm. It's not just I'm making this entity just cut from the whole cloth of my imagination and there's no basis for it. It's very much, well, I've met people who express themselves in this way. I've met people who are this kind of bubbliness, even though that's not something that I would normally be myself. It's something that I can be like, I've met this type of person, I know how they act, or I've seen like these types of people, and here's how I'd imagine if you combined these pieces together.
You know, thinking about stuff like that, or trying to imagine myself doing it, like, you know what blows my mind is like the crime and mystery writers. I'm like, how do you keep from the reader who did the thing? Like, you almost have to work backwards, and like, I don't. That, like, I have such respect for fiction writers, especially like mystery and crime writers, because that is a talent I do not have, and it sounds super complicated. You know, I think about somebody like I love urban fantasy stuff. Like Cassandra Clare's Mortal Instruments is a big one. It's young adult, whatever. I love it. But like, the amount of imagination that it takes to think of this whole world within the shell of an actual city and an actual world is just like mind blowing to me. I'm like, well, can't do that. So I'm going to stick to what I'm good at, you know, but I admire the shit out of it and respect these people. Like, wow, that's superhuman.
Yeah. I've read some stories in some books and I'm just like, I could never do this. I've read it. I see what they did. And if you asked me to make something similar, I would fail miserably.
Oh my God. Yeah, and it is. I mean, like, think about the granddaddy of fantasy, Tolkien, right? Like, this dude is brilliant. I forget just making up a whole world of just like Lord of the Rings. Then he went back and did like a history, you know, a long history of Middle Earth and like made up languages. They're like, what kind of absolute God sent to Earth, like your blessed brain. I don't even understand. It's just incredible.
And I think even with Tolkien, though, Tolkien had a history in language, like he had studied languages, and so with Tolkien studying languages, there, that becomes a matter of, okay, that's still taking a reference from what he knows, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be able to do that. I've never studied languages. I don't have any of that, but that's something that he specialized in. So yeah. Being able to expand from his working knowledge of languages and such is still taking reference from real things that he's experienced to then create the languages of Middle Earth, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you see kind of Orwell doing that in his stuff too, of 1984. I think it's Orwell Animal Farm too, like that. I don't know, that type of, you know, creativity. I don't know. Like, I just think that is just not something that I'm capable of, and I admire and respect it, and bless God, you know.
Phew. But while that's a different form of writing and a different form of a different style from what you do, your style is still very appealing and has a following of its own. And I wanted to ask you if you found the world of publishing to be welcoming to your point of view and your voice and your style so far.
I think, I think that it's a acquired taste for sure. You know, I think it's been welcome among the publishers that publish it for sure. You know, and I think it's definitely been well received amongst a certain kind of twisted humor sense of people, like twisted sense of humor that people have. I think people like me who are, you know, a little like degenerates, you know what I mean? Like, I think like that has been super well received. Yeah, it's been welcoming. I've seen a couple like one-off reviews that have been like, oh, this is terrible. You know that, you know, you go and look at the kind of books they like and they're reading Hemingway and you're like, well, what did you expect from a book called Fuck It? You know what I mean? Like, did you expect Leaves of Grass? You know what I mean? Like, somebody, this one of my favorite reviews, it's the only negative review I got, and I was in love with it. And whoever wrote it deleted it, but he called Fuck It, quote, the literary equivalent to a dick drawn on a bathroom wall. And I loved that so much. I ended up stealing it and putting it on my, like, my Twitter bio. And I'm like, that is perfect. That's the perfect example of, like, description of me as a human being, right? Like I'm just one big shit post, and like that is something I would do, draw a dick on a bathroom wall. It's immature and kind of like dumbly funny and just like a real thing somebody would do. And I really wish they would have kept that negative review up, because I was in love with it. It made me so happy.
That is a fun review. I think that some of the negative reviews end up being funnier and more memorable,
yeah,
like in a sense, than the positive ones. Like the positive ones are like, I feel great, I appreciate you, thank you for enjoying my work, right? And thank you expressing that.
Yeah, then, I'm confused by the good reviews for sure.
But then some of the negative reviews, I remember one I got was that my book was aggressively straight, was the phrase that they used. Like, it was almost too straight, they said. And it was just hilarious to me. Because there's two male main, like, characters, uh-huh, throughout the story that we follow. But they're not in a romantic relationship at all, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't try to make any chemistry for that. I didn't try to make any signals for it. But somehow this person ended up thinking that they would end up doing something, like they end up in a homosexual relationship. So they came in with some expectations, I assume, and then they weren't met, and they wrote this like long review about how it wasn't what they expected, and then the story just, it felt like it dragged on from a technical it felt very much like their feelings were hurt that they were, the two main characters weren't gay, and then everything, yeah, else after that was just them being upset about that and throwing a temper tantrum. But it was so, yeah, long, and it was the phrasing of aggressively straight just has stuck with me. And my book has been out for a long time. This was a review from the pre-reading, like the advanced reader copy. So this wasn't even after it was published. It was before it was published. And I still remember it as this just great review. Oh, and it was a negative review, but it was really great because it was memorable. And I think that your dick drawing on a writing on a bathroom wall is kind of similar to that, where it's like, that's just really sticks with me.
Yeah. I think that's hard too. And I don't know how it is from like a gay male perspective. I could talk as a queer female that like, I hesitate if I was doing fiction, I would, even if I was recounting some of my own stories, I guess, and doing my quote fiction, I would be super hesitant to talk about like lesbian sex and love, because, you know, when does my intent of representation cross the line into, well, I guess it really is based upon subjectivity and observation, but like, it's, I don't want, I don't know, maybe I should just say what I'm going to say is, I don't want to create lesbian relationships or even talk about my own lesbian relationships for it to be a three-ring circus or for it to be fetishized or like it turns into some type of weird pornography. You know, like I think it's difficult given you don't know. It doesn't happen when you're writing for a queer audience. It always happens when you're writing for a straight audience. I don't know. Like, especially being women, you know, this idea of like, ooh, two women, very right. Strange. I don't know. I don't know if other writers feel that same type of tension. I definitely know Ginsberg didn't. I mean, my God. Some of the stuff he was putting out, he wanted an audience for sure. But like, I think it needs to be talked about just because we need to get rid of and eliminate heteronormativity, you know, but I don't want, you know, a portion of my own sex life being treated like, you know, fetishizing it and you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that this is definitely something that's important to talk about when it comes to talking about marginalized groups or diversity, both for mm-hmm. sexuality as well as for ethnicity and everything, is just because you're part of that group doesn't obligate you to talk about your experiences yeah. as a member of that group, right? If yeah. it's a matter of the people who are comfortable and willing to do so should have the opportunity to express themselves. But we shouldn't be trying to force it onto people, which I think is something that also is a problem sometimes that happens, is mm-hmm. you'll get the people who are taking it the wrong way when they talk about accepting diversity. Instead, they're yeah. trying to push people to talk about their experiences, even if they're not comfortable with it, which then isn't helping.
For sure. For sure.
And in yeah. a way, I'd say it's even more, it can be even more damaging than the people who are just saying, well, I don't want diversity at all, because it can make people feel less willing and less welcome into the space.
For sure. And I think it runs the risk of traumatizing them in a really real profound way. You know, if you're getting people or forcing people to talk about something that they don't want to, or they're unwilling, you know, and I think about, you know, the first example that comes to my head is, you know, trans representation, and the question everybody wants to ask for, you know, trans person, God knows, like I was married to a trans woman many years ago. You know, the first question, anytime anybody found that off, was, you know, questions about your genitals. And it's like, my God, do you have any sense of like, what is appropriate? What is not, like, and that is me saying that, you know, and I don't have a right. scrap of appropriateness in my body, but you know, like, I think that, forcing people, into spaces where they are compelled, they are forced to talk about something that they are not comfortable with, it's inappropriate, or they just don't want to for reasons of their own privacy, can be extremely damaging, extremely traumatic for them.
And I think that that's not actually diversity at that point, because diversity is a matter of being open to people who are willing, mm-hmm. who are going to talk about their experiences. It's not a matter of forcing people to talk about their experiences.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I wanted to ask you, with being outside the mainstream and talking about things that aren't the mainstream, what would be one piece of advice that you would give to fellow writers, fellow authors who are not in the mainstream and want to talk about topics or points of view that aren't part of that mainstream format or mainstream perspective?
Ignore the big five would be my biggest, stop trying to write for them. They're just not gonna take it. They're not like, those big publishing houses are not willing to take the risk that small pubs and indie pubs do. And thank God, like, thank God for independent publishers and small publishing houses that can and do and are happy to take the risk and are really adamant about opening the space for different voices. God bless every single one of you, really. Jeez. So yeah, ignore the big five and just be authentic about what you're writing. Like, don't, like, fuck the audience. Don't worry about it. Write what you need to write and how you need to write it, and keep subbing to pubs. Just because you got 10 no's doesn't mean that, like, there are literally millions and millions and mil like, just look at Twitter, man. Like, there are millions of independent publishers out there all over the world that are covering every topic you could possibly imagine. I'm positive there is some type of, like, Sasquatch loving pub out there. You know what I mean? Like, there's something for everybody. So just, it's a numbers game. Keep going, keep going, keep public, keep trying to submit, and you will eventually get a pub and your voice will be out there. And I would say the next thing, which is really the reality of this situation, is lower your expectations. I think anybody that wants to be a writer has these wild fantasies of, being New York Times bestseller and all this money, and ooh, we're going to be the next J.K. Rowling without being a, turf piece of shit. And we're going to make this money and we're going to make a living, or we're going to be the next George R.R. Martin or the next Charlene Harris, or, some big writer that can, Danielle Steele, whatever, that can make a living on writing. That is just not the case. It is the minority. That is the exception to the rule. So get ready to work a shitty job and publish your books and be happy that they're out there. And get paid a little bit, and lower your expectations. You want to promote it? Better go take a course on Skillshare, or get ready to pony up some money on Fiverr or something, that you can have a professional do a book release. I mean, if you're that adamant about getting your stuff into the mainstream from the underbelly of the writing community, you're gonna have to spend some ducats on getting a promoter, if that's what your goal is. I don't know.
And so your advice would be, one, just be willing to put it out there. Don't give up because you've gotten a few no's.
Yeah.
And then the second one would be, understand what you're getting into, that writing is not generally going to be a career, especially starting off in writing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That even if you want it to be a career, you're going to need probably several books out first before it starts really building any momentum. And even then, a living is very different from huge fame and success.
For sure. And I think it's even more difficult if you are writing from the underbelly, from outside of the big five. Obviously you're not writing part of their formula. You're not writing the kind of stuff that middle class liberal white women want to read, that makes them feel, nice and good and warm at the end of the day, and that they're the white knights of the universe, or whatever. If you are writing something very different, or you could even go the way of Stephen King, or what's that guy's name that does all the Tom Clancy, you know what I mean? If you're not writing like these people, if you are not writing within the mainstream with the idea of catering to the mainstream, like, getting to that level of success is, I mean, it's almost impossible to begin with while you're in the mainstream forget it if you're coming from our area, you know, let's be real. And that's okay. You know, who the hell wants that kind of, I mean, I'll take a billion, you know, but like, I don't know, like that's not something that I ever consider, like, oh, I'm going to make a whole bunch of money on this book. Great. Just think about this as your art, right? And, right. And you're finding a gallery that will hang your art and a pub that loves your stuff and cool. Great. It's out there. I don't know. Like, I hate to be that kind of like asshole that's like, just be happy with what you get. You know what I mean? That's not what I mean. I mean, like stay authentic, keep subbing and like, you ain't going to be a millionaire, baby. Like, just let's be realistic about what is to be expected of this.
I think that's an important message is I think the one that you said about authenticity is really, and the ones that you said about like not giving up and continuing to sub are really important messages for people to hear. Cause I've talked to some people and they've been like, well, maybe nobody wants to hear what I have to say. And to anyone listening, if you're thinking that, there is an audience for everything.
For sure. And I'd like to add a follow-up to that, but like, I'm going to sound like an asshole. What is it that you're trying to say? Do you know what I mean? Like, if there might be a reason why nobody wants to read what you're writing. You know what I mean? As in, you suck. Or, you know, or you're Donald Trump writing some stupid shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, absolutely. There's an audience for everything, often to some people's detriment. You know, like, yeah. Like I think there are some books that maybe just shouldn't have been published. Anything coming out of the Trump camp, sure, that's one. But like, hone your craft. I mean, I guess like the point of that, of me saying all this, is like maybe the reason it's not resonating is because you need to like hone your craft and maybe you're not saying anything, you know? Because I've seen some manuscripts of friends of mine where I'm like, what are you doing here? And like, I'm just dicking around. Like I can tell. Like you don't have to have a meaningful moral at the end of the story, but you know, say something. Right. Like, you know, Twitter can be a pain in the ass because, well, now it's more than 140 characters. But back in my day, you know, you know, it's 140 characters or 250 characters to say nothing at all. So how much more so are you writing a 10,000 word manuscript and you are saying nothing at all? That might be a very real possibility. But if you're not doing that and you are saying something, yes, please continue to push. I think we know when we have something in our hands that is important to say. So if you're not getting, if you feel that way about your work, then keep submitting. There is an audience for everything.
I think something I'd like to add to that is that even if we're not adding to the like conversation for diversity, or we're not specifically like, you mentioned yourself that you wouldn't feel comfortable talking about your experiences as a queer individual. And even if we're not talking about these types of things, that's okay. And when you're writing to have if you have something that you want to express and you're expressing your art, your expression is the important thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And that if you're being true to yourself and true to what you want to write, that's a lot more important than trying to fit any particular mold. Because I think that it's not any different to try and write for the big four now, actually. They're no longer the big five, the big four. I have to remind myself of that sometimes. But it's not that much different to try and write for the big four in the mainstream as it is to try and make yourself write a story about queer experience or about Black experience or about Palestinian experience. If that's not something that's authentic to you, that you don't feel comfortable doing, don't force yourself into it.
Right. Yeah, because it's not going to come off as authentic anymore. You know, it's going to come off very forced, for sure. I think it's difficult too when you're a writer. Your medium is your, I'm gonna get, you know, old school here, but it is your pen and your paper and your words, and that's hard. Another piece of advice for writers that are submitting, you know, into publishing, please do yourself the favor, emotionally disconnect from your work. Write that little shit and be done with it. It's not your baby. You are not, excuse me, you're not feeding it. You are not putting away a college fund. You are not empty nesting when it's gone. Like, you have got, for your own mental health, please emotionally disconnect from your writing when you begin to submit. Because if you do not, every single rejection, and there will be a lot of them, you know what I mean? Every single rejection is going to be a mental health hit to you. Like, just write it and let it go out in the world. If it's rejected, it's rejected. Who cares, you know?
I think that's some good advice for people, is to keep themselves emotionally and mentally well throughout the process is very important. You know, take care of your mental health and do what you need to do that, and understand what you're doing. And so I want to bring this back around to talk about you a bit more. And with your writing, you mentioned before that you've been writing basically your entire life, and it just is something that happens for you. What would you say is your goal as a writer? Do you have a specific goal, or is it just something that you're writing and you're like, I'm writing, so I might as well put it out there?
You know, writing for me is a compulsion. I think I said this earlier, you know, writing for me is a compulsion. I'm always doing it, whether it be journaling or an academic paper or, you know, poetry or, you know, fiction, whatever you're going to call it that, or, I mean, lately it's been academic stuff, but like, it's just something that I've done since I was a kid. It's the way that I process like what happens in my life. It's the way that I process the world around me. It's the way that I process my own thoughts and emotions. So it's always happening. I think that would be my only goal. You know, it's very much a self-centered process, because I'm not writing for an audience, I'm writing for me. So like, if I write a poem about, you know, shitting my pants, it's because I'm trying to process why that happened to me and why my life is God's shitpost, you know. Or it's just, it's a memory that came out of my head at one point in this ADHD riddled brain. What if I'm writing a love poem or something that, you know, lately I've been kind of touching on or trying to get comfortable writing about some of the more difficult aspects of my life where I'm kind of sticking my toe in the water. It's always about processing. It's always about getting rid of something. I'm not getting rid of it, I guess, but like dealing with it or putting into words some type of feeling that I'm feeling at that moment. So yeah, like the goal of my writing is really to just go through this journey of processing and like maybe mental health and healing or just catharsis, or, you know, it's like therapy, right? So I don't know that there's any external goal of like, yeah, I want to be the next, you know, I don't know, Stephen King, or I want to make a career out of this, or, you know, yeah, it'd be great to make $1 million off this stuff, but that's not my intention. It's not even on my horizon. I'm just writing to get the shit out. Like, it's like lancing a boil. You're getting rid of the toxins. So like, if another piece of mine never gets published again, I'm still good. It doesn't, you know, like, it's no big deal. It's always a surprise. Like, man, you want to publish this shit? Okay, cool. All right. Yeah, you're sick. I like you. You know. But like, I'm so happy. Like that, and that's why I think like these good reviews on these books is like, man, okay. Like, I don't get it. I'm just kind of processing my own bullshit here. But I'm glad people found some meaning in it and like, and they like it, or it speaks to them on some level. But yeah, like if not another piece of mine is published again, I'm totally fine with that.
So for you, writing is, it's a personal, it's part of your personal journey, and it's part of how you process your personal journey and work through everything that's going on in your life. And anything outside of that is a bonus.
Yeah, it's a surprise. It surprises the hell out of me. I'm like, okay, cool. All right. This is cool. This is weird and wild. And, you know, I am deeply, it is very surreal. You know, like I remember being in kindergarten. I think they may have told us on the last podcast, but like drawing these little, like, right, they were stapled pieces of paper. I really remember this in kindergarten, very much so. Little stapled pieces of paper where I write like fairy tales. You know, and I specifically remember like rewriting The Princess and the Pea and doing like little kid scribble drawings of it in like this picture book, you know, and like being a writer has been my, you know, whatever the hell that means, has been my dream. I know I've always wanted to be a published writer if I was being specific. So having now coming up in July, my third book coming out, like that is a very weird, very surreal moment for me. It doesn't feel real because it's a dream actualized, you know, and it's weird and exciting and cool and almost it's almost like it didn't happen, you know, because it's just so weird. Like I just like three, let alone one. I mean, one was a big deal. Now we're on three. That's creepy and cool.
You know, it's exciting, wow. But strange.
Yes, it's very strange. And then to get reviews on it, like, what parallel universe am I living in that people give a shit enough about this weird thing that I put out that they're reviewing it? Like, that is, I don't even review shit on Amazon. So, like, the amount of effort to go through and write a review about something, like, that is beautiful. And, like, the reason I do reviews, you know, on my site of indie writers is because, like, I think that is the best way to support other writers in indie pubs. Like, let's get money in these people's hands and, like, right, let's spread these incredible stories that people are telling that we would have never known about had it not been for indie presses.
I do think signal boosting is very important and very helpful to be able to support each other. And it's something that we can do without investing any money, because let's be real, we're not the big four, so we don't have tons of money to throw at people, but we can still provide support to our fellow authors and fellow writers by interacting with what they have and sharing it with the people that we know and sharing it through to the audiences that we have and letting it get out there. And this, yeah. I want to bring this all kind of back to the publishing as a whole and ask you if there was one message you could get the publishing community, large and small, to hear and kind of understand. Do you have one message that you would say, and what would it be?
The publishing community. Shit, I don't know. You know, that's a stumper. I got a head scratch there for a minute. A message to the publishing community, not writers, I'm taking. Okay, I got one for publishers. Please update your submission guidelines and use real words about what you are looking for. Please don't talk about how you want people to submit the rattling empty wine bottles under their bed. What the fuck does that mean? I don't, you know what I mean? Like, if you are publishing and interested in publishing a specific genre, say that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, we want the skeletons in your closet and the spider webs in your butt crack. Like, what the fuck does that, please stop. Stop with this bullshit language, because all of us I know are confused. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing that I can come up with at this point in time as, like, please, please, I'm begging you. Please don't do this anymore. Yeah, please be clear with what you want.
I think that's a good message to have, because I do agree that it can be a bit confusing when you look at a publisher's website and they don't say what they want exactly and you're forced to guess. I think if you're having to guess if you're going to appeal to them, it makes it difficult to feel comfortable trying to submit to them to begin with, because like maybe this isn't, is this really the spiderweb from my butt crack? I don't know. Have I put that on the page? I don't, that may not be what I've done. And it can make it harder for writers to feel okay with submitting. And I've talked with some writers before and they've been like, yeah, I mean, I'd like to submit, but I don't know if these publishers would actually like my work. And that would be a lot more like, there should be a level of transparency, and we want to try to demystify the process as much as possible so that writers can be like, oh, this publisher wants this type of writing. This publisher is interested in dirty realism. This publisher is interested in high fantasy, or maybe both, you know, whatever they're into, like whatever you're planning on publishing is fine, but let the writers know.
And I think like, I think this is a mark of, oh, I'm going to get myself into deep shit here. Oh boy. Do I say it? Do I not say it? I think this, I'm going to, fuck it, let's just do it. I think that, you know, these types of descriptions are people who have very little experience in this industry, you know, and want to be different and interesting and eccentric and, you know, whatever. Like, we want moonbeams and, you know, fairy wings. What the fuck genre is that? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is that? Is that high fantasy? Is that like, look, what do you want? What do you want? Do you want poetry? Do you want prose? Like, I think that I think that the best pubs out there know that simplicity is key in this very specific instance of like submission guidelines. Right. simplicity is key. Hey, we are looking for prose poetry that falls into grit lit noir meat poetry, blah, 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 blah. Cool. That's where we like, okay, I don't fall into that. I don't submit. When you say that you want moonbeams and fairy wings and I don't know, snakes and snails and puppy dogs tails, you're not setting a realistic expectation. You're confusing writers because those are subjective terms, right? So like, do you want Halloween poems? What do you want? Like, be clear. And then those pubs will go on and say, oh, well, nobody's submitting. Well, no shit, you're not clear. You know, oh, I got another one. Please, whatever it is, like, I personally do not think that it is acceptable. I don't think it's, let's even just remove the word professional because that's loaded. I don't think it embraces the humanity of the person that is sending you writing to never respond with a rejection letter. It could be a form letter. Dear whatever your name is, we read your stuff. We don't think it's a good fit. Thank you so much for submitting. We look forward to you trying again. Whatever press name. You know what I mean? Can be as simple as that, a cut and paste. Please stop not responding to people that are submitting to your magazine, your book, your anthology, whatever. It's not cool. It is not human focused. It is not empathetic. It's not fucking cool. Like, you know, and then have these crazy submission rules like, oh, no simultaneous submissions. Like, that's bullshit. Come on. Like, and it shouldn't take 3 months to get back. Like, I'm not saying you need a couple days, but like a month is a good time frame, and just pop out a form letter. Hey, this didn't work for us. You know, we're so sorry. Thank you. Whatever. But like, please respond to the people that are submitting to your pub. Like, it's a human on the other end of the interbutt. And like, let's affirm that humanity.
I think that's a good message to end on, in a sense, is saying, let's affirm each other's humanity. Let's understand that we're all humans, and let's respect that with how we function and how we operate around each other.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to thank you, Leah, for talking with me today and being on the Writer's Triangle. And thank you for all of our beautiful moms for listening.
Thank you.
So, can you tell us and everybody listening where to find you on social media?
You can find me at www.poemsthatsuck.com. and Twitter, I never remember my own Twitter handle. Isn't that terrible? I think it's something like @suckasspoetry or something like
that. You know? Sounds right to me.
I think it is. And that's terrible. I should have it written on my hand all the time. And I'm on Instagram, which is a joke. But I post like really cute outfits there or something. I don't know what I'm doing. At the THEE Leia John. So it's there. I'm there. Whatever that means. Confused and scared all the time.
So there you go. And just for your confirmation, at Suckass Poetry is correct. I just checked.
Did you? Okay, good.
Good job. You remembered it.
All right.
And so all of our listeners, thank you for listening. And be sure to visit cinnabarmoth.com or cinnabarmothliterarycollections.com and check out the transcripts. And we'll also have the social media links. And thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
I'll talk to all of you beautiful moths another time. And goodbye.
Bye.